Ireland's Classic Hits Radio, it's Trina Mara. Are you a calm person or do you panic in different situations? We're all very different, I know, but the key is staying calm during a crisis because that can really dictate what happens, what the end result is. And we're joined today by John Finnerty. John, you were a Garda for a long, long time. Tell me about your career.
Yeah, Trina, I was a Garda for 30 years. So over those 30 years, I did frontline policing like for all of that 30 years. So that means I was out in the streets for the first 20 years. And after that, the last 10 years, then I was a dispatcher in the control room. So that means I was dispatching or looking after all the resources in County Limerick. Mm. So I was based in Henry Street in Limerick. So that means then that you'd be controlling all the resources, every single Garda and every single Garda van and patrol car and everything within County Limerick. So you're really responsible for everything that was going on the streets.
So presumably, I mean, every day was completely different in your job and you just never knew going in what lies ahead.
We don't know because the shifts are 12 hours long. When I left last October, the shifts were 12-hour days and 12-hour nights. So you're coming in the morning at 5 to 7 and you're ready to go at 7 a.m. So you have no idea what that first call could be. Mm. I mean, first call could be a murder, it could be a sudden death, it could be a fatal road traffic collision, or it could be something that's very, very trivial. So you just don't know, like, on any given day, like, what's going to occur on that day. So you just have to be prepared for any eventuality, whether you're a dispatcher or whether you're a frontline responder on the ground.
It's a very hard job to do because of that, because you never know what you're going to face. And I'm sure you found yourself being that guard on the doorstep, delivering terrible news to parents about, you know, a death in the family or a traffic accident. Or it must be very, very difficult.
Yeah, yes, it is difficult because you just don't know what that next call can be. I mean, you could be just waiting for the call and you've no idea what it is. But I think you do get good training in Templemore, like, so there is a very good program there. And usually when you come out into a station like Henry Street, you are working with some experienced Gardaí, like, who are by your side. So you do learn from your surroundings. You do learn then from the fellow Gardaí that you're working with. So that's a great advantage to have as well.
Were you able to switch off at the end of the day, or would you kind of be thinking about things that had happened earlier on in the day? I'd find it very difficult to switch off.
Yes, it just depends on what occurs during the day. I mean, if a situation isn't too bad over the course of the day, well, then it's pretty easy to switch off. But like if you go to a sudden death, or if you go to a murder or a suicide, particularly if it's a young person under 18, it's very, very difficult to deal with. So you may finish that night and you might be back on the following morning then to attend to post-mortem or whatever. So you're dealing with the family then perhaps for maybe a couple of years after that, because there may be a court case then, or, you know, there could be a coroner's court or whatever. So you're following up then with the family perhaps for 3 or 4 years. So also if there's a serious incident, it could be shooting, it could be a murder, and, you know, you are dealing with victims of crime then as well for a number of years. Mm. So there are different court cases then over the course of that time as well. Like, so that's something you do have to adjust to.
It's like, I guess, paramedics as well and firefighters. At the end of the day, they go home and then they start again the next day, you know, but it's a very difficult job working on the front lines like that. So staying calm is obviously really, really important, because if you're called to a scene like that, the last thing, if you start panicking, can you imagine what the people around you are going to be like? And this is really where you gain so many skills.
That's right, yeah. Now, for most people, like, you know, an extraordinary situation does occur, like could be a cyber attack, it could be a fire, it could be a crime. What happens is your body, the brain, it goes into fight or flight. The amygdala, which is located deep within the brain, will detect a threat. So this acts like an early alarm system. So it's designed to keep us alive. So consequently, our bodies go into fight or flight. So our heart rate is spiked, blood rushes to the muscles, adrenaline surges, and our breathing becomes rapid and shallow. So this all occurs before the rational part of the brain, that is the prefrontal cortex, has fully analysed the situation. So what can you do then? Well, as Gardaí or really as anybody out there, just to remain calm and then focus on your breathing. So really is to control your breathing for that couple of seconds. So that means then that you're able to regain control then of your brain, the prefrontal cortex. And that's the rational part of the brain. That's the decision-making part of the brain. So if you can regain control of that part of the brain, well, then you're able to make rational decisions and deal with whatever, you know, lines up in front of you, whatever's going on in front of you. But when you're in fight or flight, when you're dealing with that situation, it's very, very difficult then to control what's going on around you because you're not thinking clearly.
I always think that, you know, if, God forbid, I was ever broken into, if there was a burglary in the house and I was in the house, I always feel like, say if I was up in the bedroom, I think I would just freeze on the spot and I wouldn't be able to breathe.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I think it also depends on the person as well, and it depends on how confident you are, but self-talk is very good as well, to tell yourself beforehand that you're able to deal with any matter, no matter what occurs in your life. So just to have that confidence and tell yourself that no matter what happens, whether it's day or night, that you have that ability then to deal with that situation that's right in front of you. So as Gardaí, that's one of the skills I learned. After about 3 years, then I really was confident to deal with whatever situation that I was presented with. So that's self-talk, to tell yourself that you're going to be okay, that you're going to be able to deal with that situation. And really, none of us knows really how we're going to deal with that situation until it does present itself in front of you. And you might say to yourself, Trina, that you're going to freeze or whatever. But when the situation comes, you might be well able to deal with it. So I think a lot of it does depend on the confidence you have and also the self-talk and what you tell yourself.
Yeah, I say that I'd freeze on the spot. But if I saw somebody coming into my house, say, for example, to snatch my daughter, bloody sure I would deal with the situation. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd be able to cope with that because you'd be in that frame of mind where you're like, I'm not letting this happen.
Absolutely. And it's the same thing, really, you know?
Yeah.
So if you're able to deal with one area of your life, you'll be able to deal with another area of your life. So there's no difference there, really.
Now, you do have some tips if you did find yourself in a scenario like that, how to deal with it, how to cope in a crisis. What are the top tips then?
Well, I think no matter where you're going in life, whether you're going into a coffee shop or any particular area, any particular place, is situational awareness. So that's you knowing exactly where you are. So like if I'm ever going into a coffee shop or a restaurant, I always want to sit facing the door. So I know if anything comes in that door, at least I can see what's going on. I have an idea what's going on right in front of me. So I'm in a position then to deal with it as well. So I think that's very, very important, situational awareness.
John, it's funny that you've just said that, right? Because I was only talking to my husband yesterday about this exact thing. So we were away on holidays there, and when we would choose where we were going to sit in the restaurant, he always wanted to sit facing the door. And I said to him, why do you always want to sit that way? He said, so I can see what's coming in, and say if anything happened, if there was an attack or anything happened, I would be aware of it and I would be able to protect my family. He goes, I don't know what it is. I would always do that. And same for, you know, if we were to go to a concert or a show or something, if he had a choice of seat, he'd always want to be at the end of the aisle so that he could get out. But this is all part of that.
Yeah, that's all part of that. Yeah, as we call it, situational awareness. It's just knowing where you are, so that if anything does go wrong, you're in a position then to deal with it. I think also as well is if you're making a phone call, now this goes back to kind of crime prevention as well, but if you're walking down the street and you want to make a phone call, well, stop, put your back up against the wall and make the phone call then, like while your back is to the wall, so that you can see what's going on around you. Because you see people walking up and down the street and they're making phone calls or texting, but they're not really aware of what's going on around them. Mm. You know, and that happens all the time. And someone can just walk up, snatch that mobile phone off you and just, you know, walk off with it. So I think situational awareness, that's really key. That's really, really important, no matter what you're dealing with in life. I think the second thing then as well is just remaining calm. And it's controlling your breathing for that first couple of seconds. So if something happens, it's to regain control of your breathing. Because when an incident happens, well, when our body goes into fight or flight, and really when our body goes into fight or flight, we're not thinking rationally. It's either get out of the situation or else in turn and fight that person. But really, we're not thinking rationally. So the only way to do that then really is to just regain control of your breathing. And when you do that, when you slow down, when you pause, well, then you'll regain that rational part of the brain, and you'll be well able to make decisions then that would possibly save your life or save somebody else's life or get you out of that situation.
Just come back slightly there, John, to the situational awareness that you mentioned there. I was just thinking to myself there, like if I stood in a lift with somebody for 2 or 3 minutes, I wonder would I recognise them? You know, and I'm sure this happened in your career as a Garda, you know, you'd be looking for witnesses for things and you'd be like, what did you see that day? Well, I didn't see anything. Or if somebody was sitting beside me in a cafe for a half an hour or an hour, would I recognise them? And all of that is because we're not opening our eyes and being aware of what's around us.
Yeah, and that's one of the difficulties we do have. And that's one of the difficulties I've seen in my career as well over 30 years, witnesses giving evidence in court, you know, and they're asked, where were they? What time were they there at? What did they see? What position, where were they standing, where were they sitting, what did they see in front of them? Can you recall what happened, the events? And sometimes when people are not just aware of their surroundings, well, they really can't recall then exactly what did happen, you know, in that particular time. So I think, yeah, with that situational awareness, it is just to be aware of what's going on around you, like, and just to be clued in.
It must be getting harder and harder, actually, for guards like that, for witnesses, because people are, their head's stuck in the phone. You might say, oh, sure, there's cameras everywhere now and everyone has a camera on their phone as well, but everyone's head is stuck in the phone, so they're not actually seeing the things that are going on around them.
Yeah, that's the difficulty as well, you know. Yeah, that does happen all the time, but it's only actually when you go to take a statement off somebody then and you ask them, well, what did happen, what did occur, and they can't really give a proper description, or they can't really tell you exactly what did occur. And that's the difficulties then that, you know, we do have in court down the line, because very often a court case could take maybe 3 years to get going, to get into the circuit court or the high court or whatever, and you may have one key witness and you're relying on that witness then to possibly identify the perpetrator or possibly give evidence against the person, you know, who is charged or summoned or whatever. So yeah, that is one of the difficulties. And people I see nowadays, you know, they're stuck in their phones and they're not really having that situational awareness that we probably had as a human race before mobile phones did come in.
But I'd say it's completely changed since you started as a Garda.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, 30 years is a long time, you know, and there has been huge change in that time. But like, it's evolving all the time. It's evolving every day. Technology is changing now and it's moving faster and faster and faster. Because when I started, like, there was no such thing as CCTV. There was nothing like that. The technology now, like, is way better, but it doesn't make the job any easier either, though.
Another point that you made as well, when we do find ourselves in a particularly stressful situation like that and we want to stay calm, is breaking down the problem into bite-sized tasks so that it makes it more doable.
Yeah, that's it. So as a guard, when you're out there policing, you have only one priority, and that's to keep the public safe. So it's protection of life. That's the number one key priority of any guard who is on duty. Like, so that's the one thing that no matter what happens, whatever occurs on the street, is protection of life. That supersedes everything. So that's the most important thing. So as a guard, that's what you're keeping in the back of your mind when you're going to any incident. It's protection of life. And it's only when that life is protected then that you arrive at the scene, you get an ambulance, you get that person medical assistance or whatever. It's only after that then that you're talking about preserving the scene or gathering evidence for a court case then later on or whatever, like. But when you're working an ordinary job, then you have to work out, well, what's the most important factor that you have to address, like, in any given job? And it's just to take that into consideration. What is the most important thing that you have to deal with when a situation presents itself?
What's that thing that they say, the house is on fire, the tap is running, and you have to decide what to do? You need to get out of the house, is what you need to do.
Yeah, you do, yeah. And the first thing to do is, yeah, you have to protect your own life first. That's the most important thing, like, you know, protect your own life before anybody else's.
We mentioned the situational awareness, but treat every small crisis as a test case. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, some big event, some major event could occur in your life and you may or may not be able to deal with it. So if you treat, like, every small crisis as a learning opportunity, I don't know whether you're a cyclist or a motorist, or you could be both. So you're a cyclist and you're just cycling down the street, and this motorist comes up behind and starts beeping the horn at you and throws you off or whatever. So you could retaliate then, you could react and start shouting at the driver, and all of a sudden the shouts going back and forth and everything else. So what I would say is, rather than react, start shouting, well, just respond or don't respond. You know, don't engage in a situation like that. So you're dealing with a situation that's right in front of you and you're not making that situation worse. Rather than retaliating, getting into a shouting match, just keep going. And when it's safe to do so, then you can just pull in and you can contact the Gardaí if you feel that that person needs to be held accountable for his or her actions. So no matter whatever occurs in your life, just treat that as a kind of a learning opportunity. So you may have small kids, and you could be inside in a shop and the child may be only 3 or 4 or whatever, and all of a sudden goes missing. So again, you know, you're treating that as a learning opportunity as well. Not to panic, go to the security, ask them about the child or whatever the case may be. So you're treating every small crisis as a major opportunity then to learn. So when that big event does occur, it could be a major event, that you're able to deal with it then, that you have the skills deal with it.
Very good advice in all areas of your life and work and everything about not reacting so quickly to things, because normally things aren't as big as they might seem at that moment in time. If you even wait 5 minutes, you'll have calmed down.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I mean, if your life is under threat, that's one thing. But in most cases, your life is not under threat. Now, as a guard, like I spent 20 years going to road traffic collisions. Now, most of them are trivial enough. Okay, there's a bit of damage done. There's nobody hurt. But like, you know, the cars are left blocking other cars in the middle of the road. The two parties have gone out and they start shouting and roaring at each other. No details have been exchanged and nothing has been done. They've actually made a bad situation worse. And at the end of the day, nobody's injured. There's a small bit of damage. But the insurance companies can solve that anyway. Yeah. So, like, it's not a big deal. So it's only afterwards that people think, well, really, you know, I wasn't injured. Okay, there was a bit of damage. So big what? Deal. Big deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit of metal. So what, like?
Actually, John, on that, while we have you, if you are involved in a small tip, say, right, on the roads, are you supposed to call the guards? Do you always have to call the guards or do you not always have to?
No, you don't have to.
Yeah, that's something
so
that people
you literally get out of your car. If you are involved in a road traffic collision, get out of the car. Park it in a safe place, engage the other person, then the other driver, swap details. So your name, your address, the reg number of the car, the type of car, and the insurance details. So if you have your mobile phone, which, I mean, the easy thing to do is to take a photograph of their insurance disc, so you have the details of their insurance details. Mm. And afterwards, then the insurance companies then can solve it if you don't come to an agreement there and then.
Yeah.
You know, but it is very, very important to engage with the other driver.
I'll never forget, I was only about 19 and I had my full driving license and I was driving home from college one day and this woman went into the back of me and we pulled over and did, and it was so new to me, you know, we pulled over and she said, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm in a rush to get the children from school, they're standing at the school gates. And I took her name and address and her phone number. I said, look, don't worry, you know, we'll sort this out later on. And she had given me all fake details.
Okay, yeah.
Lesson learned, yeah, age 19.
Yeah, well, that does occur as well. But if you have your mobile phone and just, you know, take a photograph of the reg number of the car, take a photograph of the insurance details, the insurance disc on the car as well. Now, again, that could be a false insurance disc, but, I mean, you can report the matter to the Gardaí and they can follow up afterwards. Generally, you will know it by the type of person that you're dealing with, whether they're legit or not.
Oh, it was a lesson learned. That was pre-mobile phones with cameras on it, so...
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
A long time ago,
yeah.
Because I'm 102 now, John.
Okay, yeah.
You're really interested in this whole area and you had a story to tell us about a ham sandwich.
Yeah, there's a story about a ham sandwich. So one particular day, I was based in County Limerick for 10 years. So I got this call one day. It was a cold, dreary, wet evening in November in the middle of winter. And I got this call to go and deal with this guy who was like shouting and roaring obscenities. Now, he was standing outside of a house, shouting and roaring obscenities at about 10 different neighbours who were just outside the house. Now, they were petrified. So I arrived at the scene anyway. And literally, when I seen the guy, I just wanted to turn the patrol car and get out of there, like, because I was on my own and I knew there'd be no assistance helping me out, like, for at least an hour. So when I got there, the guy, he was about 6'7". He had a shaved head, tattoos. He was wearing a white vest. Looked like it hadn't been washed in a couple of months. With huge muscles. And he was shouting and roaring obscenities. And really, when I seen him, you know, my body really went into a panic mode. I literally did not want to have to deal with this person because really, you know, I wouldn't have been able to arrest him because, like, he was bigger and he was stronger than me. And I was on my own. I would have no assistance for at least an hour. But anyway, I decided, you know, to calm myself, control the situation, get out of the patrol car, walk towards him anyway. So it turned out anyway, I engaged him in conversation. Turns out his name was John as well. Now, that's not his real name, but I'm just using that name. So anyway, I engaged him in conversation and he would start shouting back and forth at me. So at this stage, there was a lady who was, I'd say, in her early 70s. She was his next door neighbor. So she comes out of the house. Now, she's eating a ham sandwich. Now, she'd one bite gone out of the sandwich. So I looked at that sandwich and I thought, God, that's a lovely sandwich. You know, I'm really, really hungry. I'd love to eat that sandwich. So I knew, well, if I'm hungry, probably John is hungry as well. So I said to John, you hungry? And he just bellows out anyway, or thundered out. He says, I'm starving. So the lady, anyway, she looked at me. I looked at her. And there was a kind of an understanding between the two of us. So she handed John the sandwich. So John took the sandwich in his hand and he just gobbled it down. So the lady then, she turned to me and she turned to John. She said, John, you know, do you want another sandwich? So he just shouted out, yes. So she went back into the house to make two more sandwiches. So I had managed to engage John in conversation then. She came back out with the sandwiches, gave him the two sandwiches, cup of tea, and we'd all that eaten then. He was perfectly calm. So at this stage, you know, I'd been there with him for about 45 minutes, I'd say. He'd calmed down. The ham sandwich, the cup of tea had calmed him down. Eventually, guard assistants arrived. My colleagues arrived. So I said to John, look, John, you know, I can get you all the help you need. So I managed to get him into the patrol car. There was no drama. There was no handcuffs. There was no shouting and roaring. Both of us got back into the patrol car and back to the station, and he got the help he needed. And there was no one, you know, no one hurt. The situation was dealt with.
Is that
all
a true
because
story,
of ham
John?
Sandwich. That's a true story,
no
yeah.
Way. So
yeah.
He was just hangry.
Yeah. He was.
I'd say you've seen everything, every kind of situation and story, have you, over the years? I'd say there's been a lot of mad ones and a lot of funny stories. Can you think of any funny ones?
There's been a lot of stories, but a lot of them I just couldn't repeat, you know, because like you just wouldn't believe them, like, you know.
I remember John, a listener, texting in the show about being mortified because she went to the shopping centre, and when she came out of the shopping centre, the car was gone, and she went up to security, and they're obviously, are you sure you parked it in that spot? Absolutely, I did. Blah, 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 blah. Going all around the whole place, the car park, looking for the car, and they called the guards, and the guards arrived at the shopping centre, and as they're sitting there taking her statement, she realised that she'd gotten the bus that day.
Okay.
Oh, these things happen. I'm sure you've seen them happen, John.
Yeah, there's a lot more stories, but I don't think I could repeat them on air. That's the thing. Perhaps privately we could have a word about it. Right?
Very good. Now, you're helping people out. You were saying about, you know, staying calm. Public speaking is a thing that scares a lot of people because of that. So this is where this ties in. If you can stay calm, you'll be able to do public speaking.
Yeah, that's it really. You know, so I'm teaching public speaking skills. So I did that for 5 years, my last 5 years within the Gardaí, and now I'm doing it privately for both groups of individuals and for individuals on a one-to-one basis as well. But yeah, a lot of the people, they have the skills, all right, but when they get up there, then like they feel really, really nervous, and it may not work out for them that very well. So in psychology, there's a thing called pre-performance routine. So that means really doing the same thing for every single speech that you're doing. So if you think of a professional athlete, you think of the World Cup. Well, a lot of the players, they have this concept called the pre-performance routine. So it's doing the same thing before every single game. It's like having the same meal. You're putting on the same gear. It could be even putting on that left boot first and tying the knot on it. Mm. So it's doing the same thing for every single match they're playing. So when it comes to public speaking, you know, it works very well as well. So if you're doing a gig, let's say anywhere in the country, so you can incorporate that pre-performance routine into it. So make sure you get to the gig or the hotel or wherever you're speaking at least an hour beforehand. Make sure the PowerPoint is working. Make sure everything is working there. Make sure that you engage then with the other speakers or whatever. So you're doing the same thing then every single time. Before you go on and before you've been introduced, it's a good idea then to stand to the side, not be sitting in the audience. Because if you're sitting in the audience, you have to get up, you have to walk up to the stage, and you may not be feeling that very confident. Mm. So if you're standing to the side of the stage, you're already standing up, and you'll feel more confident then as your name is being called out and you can just walk onto the stage. So that's one of the lessons I learned in psychology. It's called the pre-performance routine. Good. That means engaging in the same routine every single time.
What's that other one as well? Is imagining the crowd wearing Mickey Mouse ears or imagining them naked?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't
nervous.
Really. No.
Don't do that.
No, definitely not that. No, 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 definitely not.
Is it individuals that you're helping then, John, or is it companies or what is it?
Yeah, I work with both individuals on a one-to-one basis as well. I have a program there over 5 weeks, so it's about an hour every single week. And I do the same program there with groups in different companies and corporations as well. So, yeah, both individuals and both corporations as well.
Do you know who I think? There's one kind of age group that I think that could really do with this. It's the younger people. They're so nervous about talking to people, about even making phone calls, I find, because they've never really had to. They've never had to make a phone call or stand up and talk.
Yeah, it's like saying, look, just get into that car and drive to Cork from Dublin, but you've never been in a car before, you've never had any driving lessons. How can you expect anybody to drive a car when they've never actually done it before? So really, like, I think people need to learn those skills, certainly working with PowerPoint as well, or a prop or whatever else you're using up there. There is an expectation, I think, on employers that all employees have already the skills. But if you don't have the skills, how can you go and give that presentation? So really, it's a matter of just learning the skills. But it does take a bit of time, but practice really is the most important thing.
If someone would like to do one of your training courses, John, how can they contact you?
Yeah, they can contact me on LinkedIn. They'll find me on LinkedIn there, John Finnerty.
So that's great. So top tips on training a calm mind and how to prepare yourself if you have to do presentations for work or for whatever situation. Lots of insights into what it was like being a Garda as well. Did you ever want to do anything else, John? Or were you always wanting to be a Garda?
No, it's just something that happened. It was never in my head at all, you know. I just left school. I'm from Roscommon. I ended up going to University College Cork, UCC. I did an arts degree down there for 3 years. And then just before I did the J1 then after that, but just before I went to the J1, I just seen the ad in the paper looking for Gardaí and I applied. And fortunately, I was accepted and I came back from the United States then and straight into Simpleborough. And 30 years later now, I left at midnight on the 16th of October last. So yeah. I just did 30 years, finished. And now I'm freelancing. So yeah.
So is that you retired, John, then after 30 years?
Can
you
retire? Retired, yeah.
You can do that
yeah,
for 30
retired.
Years. God, I should have been a Garda.
Yeah. They've changed all those regulations now. I think it's different now. Like, but certainly I joined at 21 and I retired at 52. But the first 15 months is not considered a service. So you do the first 15 months and then your service starts then after 15 months. So
I
did the 15 months, did the 30 years and finished and got out. And I just reinvented myself now at the moment. That's what I'm doing.
I'm seeing a lot of ads and videos coming up on social media for Garda recruitment at the moment. And some of them they're so young, you know, coming out of Templemore. But they're also taking in the older age group now. And there was a video of a guy who just joined at the age of 50. He used to be a truck driver, I think he said. And and is loving it.
Yeah, that's right. And it's funny, like I joined in 1994. You could join up to the age of 26 then. Mm. So there were some guys, now I was 21 going in. So there were some guys going in at 25 and we thought they were old, you know. But they were old. So now you can join up to 50, like. So, it's certainly changed in that respect.
There used to be lots of restrictions, height restrictions, and you needed to speak Irish, didn't you? I think that's gone now as well. So it's much more open to people now to be able to join.
Yeah, at the time you needed to have passed Irish in the Leaving Cert, and you needed to be 5'9" as well for a man. There was a lot more restrictions then, but now I think there are more opportunities there now for everybody who would want to consider it as a career.
What do you think, John? Would you recommend it as a career?
Yeah, I would, yeah. Yeah, because I mean, there's different units. I mean, you can get into various different specialized units. So, like, no matter what area that you're interested, there probably is something there for you, right? And it is an interesting and varied career, but it's not an easy one either, you know. Yeah. So you have to consider that before you're thinking of going in. And you are going to be doing shift work as well. And
shift work is the
easy.
Thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
You're permanently tired.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did it for 30 years and working nights. When I finished up, there were 12-hour nights. So, like, they're not easy. Either, like, so that's something you have to take into consideration.
Sometimes great if you have family or kids or whatever, because you're kind of getting a bit of both. Best of both worlds.
Yeah, like when my daughter was young, you know, I used to come home after working a 12-hour night and come home, be home at 7:30 in the morning, and then be available then to bring her to school and then get to bed for a couple of hours and get up then and collect her. So it can be, you know, it can be okay in that respect, but it does catch up with you. You know, working nights does certainly catch up with you, and certainly not that easy.
That's why you get to retire.
Exactly.
Well, John, it's been lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for giving us the insight today, and maybe we'll talk again. I'm sure you've got a fair few more stories to share. We might have to do that off the air though.
Yeah, Trina, I might have to audit those stories before I go on, I think, you know, or just change them somewhat.
John, thank you so much. It's Ireland's Radio.